get a good understanding of cultural nationalism, you have to understand the national question, especially here in America. With the black ghettos that do exist as part of a colony, along with the Puerto Rican ghettos, the Mexican-American ghettos, are colonies of the mother country, of white America. So that the national question, it has to be understood to deal with the understanding cultural nationalism. These ghettos are in fact real and part of reality. So that when people call for cultural nationalism and not political nationalism, well, they've prostituted the question already. Now, the cultural aspect gives breed to chauvinism, racism, an unreasoning, irrational love of one's sex or race or organization. In this case, it becomes racial chauvinism. And it's one of the key aspects of fascism, wherever it's reared its head, from the first signs of fascism, which was the early Ku Klux Klan in this country, to Austria, Italy, Bulgaria, Nazi Germany, the fascists of imperialist Japan. This national chauvinism was always a key element. When you understand that part of it, and the overall national question, the history of the national question, then you can begin to get a better understanding of cultural nationalism. Now, to understand the history of cultural nationalism, it takes a little research. Now, it's been said by some so-called knowledgeable black people that white people couldn't know anything about cultural nationalism. But the fact is that white people invented it in Austria on the last half of the 18th century. There were two clowns called Bauer and Springer who were much akin to the cultural nationalists that we have running loose in the United States today. And they were social democrats, renegades, sellouts, traitors from the genuine revolutionary struggles. The history of cultural nationalism was updated in 1955 in Africa, primarily by the CIA, to send Foreman to Africa behind Malcolm to clean up, to use Tom and Boya as a tool to hold back the key aspects of the black liberation struggle that were taking place in on the African continent at that time. Then in 1965, the CIA brought cultural nationalism back the United States in the forms of Marlon Aron Karenga, Leroy Jones, cats like Charles Kenyatta, leader of the Mau Maus, who was preached a long line of black rhetoric and furnished bodyguards for Rockefeller at Martin Luther King's funeral. So when you examine the whole history of the question, you can see that white people can know quite a bit about cultural nationalism because they invented it. They had it before any blacks became adherents or prophets of cultural nationalism, the high priest of cultural nationalism. And that any culture that is snatched from the sky or evolves from the ethos of some moonistic nigger's head is really just his subjective feelings that he's trying to project into the objective politics of a given place and time. When people are suffering from problems that are, in the final analysis, class problems. They separate rhyme, and they separate facts from reason. They substitute rhyme for reason. This gives rise to a brand of demagogy that is also a key asset of any fascist regime that divorces they divorce themselves from all rational thinking and become quite irrational, become the real demagogues, put forward supernatural theories, moonistic theories that don't deal with the political questions, that subvert modern scientific knowledge. And then in the last analysis, if a cultural nationalist does sincerely believe, and a lot of people, a cultural nationalist can be a cultural nationalist without knowing it, just as many people are fascists without knowing it, but this doesn't change the objective reality. So in the final analysis, even when they do intend to put something into practice, say, particularly in the forms of conscious and organized economic and political struggles, in the forms of armed assaults on the pig power structure, that they take a thesis like guerrilla warfare and they totally separate it from the only thing that's made guerrilla warfare work in the last 100 years, which is Marxism-Leninism. And they negate Marxism and profess to adopt guerrilla warfare as one of their own tactics, when in fact, guerrilla warfare is one of the tenets of Marxism. I think it's very key that you find that some of the strongest champions of cultural nationalism were at one time very fascinated with the pig power structure, very fascinated with the female symbol of the pig power structure, the ultra-feminine white woman. And in the final analysis, it's quite evident that a culture is based on economics and can only come from economics. And the only revolutionary cultures have come from economic conditions that have forced people to revolt. And the culture of revolution is manifested in AK-47s, 120-millimeter recoilless rifles, M1 carbines, BARs, 30-caliber machine guns. The culture of revolution is not manifested in dashikis and bubas and spears and bones through the noses. I think it's a very key question. We have to understand one thing that's very clear as far as the Black Panther Party is concerned, and that's that we do see a concrete value in being aware of our heritage. We have no fixations on ancient Zulu kingdoms of 17th century. So what we do understand is the value of realizing our heritage and the value of staying tuned into reality, accepting all this progressive from wherever it comes from, and putting this to use in service of the people in the struggle for liberation. One thing that should be easy for people to understand when they try to understand how cultural nationalism has turned the question of economics and culture upside down.
Cut!
There's one common misconception that's used as a cover-up for cultural nationalism, and that's that people like to go around saying that, well, you have to start from cultural nationalism to go into revolution. This is an out-and-out lie. Judging that on personal experience, although I have an African name, I was never a cultural nationalist. Depending on how you spell it, it either means the name of a tribe that was one of the last tribes to finally give up the old ways and customs to start adopting to the capitalist economics that are prevailing in Africa. Also, the word in its older pronunciation, Maasi, spelled M-A-A-S-I, is a Swahili word for revolution. And I got hung up on it, but I never thought that we would have any cultural revolution prior to the armed struggle, prior to the socialist revolution, or either the bourgeois democratic revolution. I think Chief of Staff David Hilliard is a very good example of the fact that one doesn't have to have any racial consciousness that is stamped with a UCLA, a good housekeeping seal of approval, to move to the point of being very revolutionary. But cultural nationalism is by no means a stepping stone to progress. Cultural nationalism is the most regressive, archaic, and backwards approach to the question of revolution imaginable.
Cut. Cut.
I think that we'll see more in the future about how the bootlicking cultural nationalists are in the direct service of the fascist pig power structure here. There are many key political questions in which they're in too much agreement. This is why you see groups that are supposedly extremists occupying the same podium, speaking from the same microphones, groups as diverse as the Nation of Islam and the American Nazi Party. This is why you find in many cities you have cultural nationalists, little black bootlicking capitalists who are champions of the Wallace for President type of approach to things. And then the excuse is that this will heighten the contradictions and automatically move the people closer to a revolution. There are many basic class approaches. For instance, the woman question, the cultural nationalist approach to the woman question, the subjugation of the women, the exploitation of the women in practice is increased, while platitudes are scattered all over about the greatness of this nationality of woman or that nationality of woman. And in fact, subjugation, the using, the prostitution of the women is increased even more. This is quite evident in the ideology of cultural nationalism, and it's historically evident in the ideology of fascism.
Cut.
A lot of people have suffered under the delusion that black people shouldn't criticize black people no matter what in front of white people, but we understand that we can't take a liberal attitude and let things slide when a chump is black and he's it's obvious that he's gone wrong, that he's part of the pig power structure, knowingly or unknowingly. And in any objective criticism of cultural nationalism, we have to understand that a lot of people in it are sincere, but just politically backwards. That we find that most of the leadership were political science majors, but the rank and file are politically, they come from the ranks of the most backwards people on the face of the earth. Especially in our struggle, that we want to liberate the scattered colonies, counties, and all the other groupings that black people existed in this country, we want to liberate them.